Welcome to today's reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Monday, April 22nd. I'm your reader, Teresa Whitaker, and here's our first story. Bill Quinby, moral compass of Cedar Rapids, dies. If there was a program that needed a boost or a person in need, Quinby was the person to contact. And this is by J.R. Ogden. Bill Quinby was a doer. If there was a project that needed a little help, a program that needed a boost, or a person in need, Bill Quinby was the person to contact. If you wanted to get information on a former athlete or a coach from many years ago, Bill Quinby was the person to call. If he didn't know them personally, he knew somebody who did. Quinby died in his sleep Saturday morning at the age of 92. Dad did it on his own. Just a handful of the things Quinby played a role in around Cedar Rapids, a place he called home his entire life. The building of a new Veterans Memorial Stadium. East Central Iowa Special Olympics, Habitat for Humanity, the Cedar Rapids JCs, Cedar Rapids Community Theater, the Cedar Rapids Board of Ethics in Government, the Arc of East Central Iowa, the Cedar Rapids Sports Club, Camp Courageous, Cerebral Palsy Association, and more, many more. He did a lot of good. He's just a great human being. The more you visit with him, he's just a pure person, a really good-hearted man. And that's what Kurt Ferentz of the University of Iowa football coach said about him. Oh, I'm sorry. That is not what Kurt Ferentz said. That was what Delaney said. He had a lot of good done for him, too. Because he felt blessed his entire life to be part of this community, he and his wife of 62 years, Janice, decided giving back was going to be part of their legacy. Janice died in 2018. Quinby, however, would never admit or take credit for the good he did. "I didn't do anything for the community," he said during a 2023 interview with the Gazette's Mike Lass. "Bill represents all that is good about us as people, humble, thankful, loving," Cedar Rapids City Council member and close friend Dale Todd said Saturday. Quietly and behind the scenes, he provided counsel and inspiration to several generations of leaders in our community, and, when faced with tough choices, to make the right decision. "I have often asked myself, what would Quinby do? He was our moral compass." Iowa football coach Kirk Ferentz first met Quinby when Ferentz was an assistant in the NFL with the Cleveland Browns. Ferentz's father-in-law, the late Gary Hart, was an official with Quinby. "It's a loss for everybody," Ferentz said of Quinby's death after Iowa's final spring practice Saturday. "Our association is kind of coincidental. I met him when I was in the NFL and he was working, but then got to know him better when we moved back here. So through that relationship, our friendship kind of developed further, and he's been down to practice, those types of things. When you learn Bill's story and the things that he did, first of all, he's an all-Iowa guy. His community service and the things he meant to the people in Cedar Rapids, he's just a great human being. The more you visit with him, he's just a pure person, a really good-hearted man." Former U.S. Senator Tom Harkin, in 2008, wrote in the Congressional Record, Quinby's life, quotes, "life continues to be a model of ideal citizenship and embodies what it means to be an Iowan. Bill has spent his life living by a simple mantra, work hard and give back." Quinby grew up in northeast Cedar Rapids, not far from Daniels Park and the baseball field that now bears his name. It's now the home field for the Coe College baseball program. An Iowa graduate and lifelong Hawkeye fan, Coe always had a special place in Quinby's heart. He was the director of career counseling and the athletics director at the college. He's a recipient of Coe's Distinguished Service Award. Sports, too, always were a big part of Quinby's life. He was an official in the NFL for 17 years after working junior high school, and college games. He was a teacher, athletics director, and a principal in the Cedar Rapids School District for more than 20 years. One of his biggest projects was getting the new Veterans Memorial Stadium built in time for the 2002 season, working with Sarah Else, who co-chaired the Citizens for the Stadium Committee, and many others. "He's such a steadfast, loyal friend," Else said in that 2023 feature. Former Cedar Rapids Mayor Ron Corbett, who was chief executive officer of the Cedar Rapids Chamber of Commerce while the new stadium was being built, said Quinby was one of the greatest men I've ever known in my life in that same article. "He was a great mentor to me, though Bill would probably disagree with that. He looks at others as his mentors." A catcher on Franklin High School's 1949 state championship baseball team, he played baseball at Iowa. He also was on the football team, but three surgeries on one knee in his senior year of high school and one on the other knee early in his days in Iowa City ended that career. One of Quinby's favorite stories was when he was a student manager on the football team coached by Forrest Evanchevsky. Evie took a liking to me, Quinby said in that 2023 interview. After a 1952 game at Minnesota, a Gophers fan charged at Evanchevsky. Quinby took on the charging fan. I just stepped between them, Quinby said more than 70 years later. I biffed the guy right in the belly. He went foof. He didn't go down, but he was wobbly. From then on, my nickname was Evie. From Evie was Punchy. Like everybody who knew Quinby, Ference has enjoyed his many stories over the years. Bill's just a really kind, genuine human being who has demonstrated through his actions that he really cares about other people, Ference said in that 2023 article. He cares about young people and is just truly a caring, giving person. Our next article, Kahn listens to concerns about fertilizer plant deal. Federal agency can investigate or file suit to block deals. This is by Aaron Jordan out of Nevada. Lena Kahn, known for trying to stop mergers of Big Ten companies and grocery giants, heard from Iowa farmers Saturday who want her to investigate Koch Industries' plans to buy one of the state's largest fertilizer companies built with state tax credits. The Federal Trade Commission chair spoke briefly before listening to about 20 people speak about how they've been affected by price hikes in the farm sector. In order to have a safe and resilient food system, we need to have an agricultural sector and agricultural markets that are fair, open, and competitive, Kahn told about 80 people at the gathering's event space. Farmers often have been on the front lines against monopolies, said Kahn, a legal scholar and former journalist. She described how farmers fought back in 1819 when railroads wanted to pick which crops could ship by rail. Kahn got to know the struggles of independent chicken farmers when she was covering the Obama administration's failed attempts to prevent abuse by big processors. The Iowa Democratic Party asked Kahn to investigate whether Koch Industries' plan to buy the Iowa Fertilizer Company violates antitrust laws. Aaron Healy Lehman, president of the Iowa Farmers Union, read a letter from a member who was too fearful about retaliation from fertilizer retailers to speak publicly. The farmer described a phenomenon that keeps farmers from getting ahead. In 2021 and 2022, there was a run-up in commodity prices, which had been depressed for the previous 6 years, Lehman read. Higher food prices are good for farmers' pocketbooks. But before farmers could celebrate, the price of fertilizer rose to record levels, snatching any profits the farmers could have made that year from selling their corn. The timing seems suspicious, the farmer wrote. I would like there to be a possible investigation into possible market manipulation. Some farmers fear the cost of fertilizer will go up even more if Koch Ag and Energy Solutions is allowed to buy the Iowa Fertilizer Company, built in 2017 near Weaver, with more than $200 million in state and local tax credits. OCI Global, an Egyptian-owned firm, announced in December plans to sell the plant for $3.6 billion pending antitrust review. Derek Englund, secretary of the board of the Northeast Missouri Cooperative, who drove up from Saturday's event, says his co-op purchases about 4,000 tons of anhydrous ammonia a year after comparison shopping from primary producers, including CF Industries and Koch, he said. We were so happy when the Iowa fertilizer plant opened to have another source in our local area, he said, adding that this year the IFC's prices were about $70 a ton cheaper. Scott Henry, who took Kahn on a tour of his farm near Nevada on Saturday, said it may not be a bad thing for Koch, an American company, to buy the Iowa plant from a foreign firm. We need to be careful if you want to continue to support American companies, regardless of what I believe or not believe about their political beliefs and practices, he said. Koch Industries, based in Wichita, Kansas, is one of the largest privately owned companies in the world. It was founded by Fred Koch, father of brothers Charles and David Koch, who funded the right-leaning political group Americans for Prosperity. Coke issued a statement Saturday saying they have received support from many customers and are confident the Federal Trade Commission will allow our transaction to proceed after they have concluded their analysis and customer outreach. Coke Fertilizer is firmly committed to operating and growing production at the Wever facility, the statement said. We have been impressed by the Wever employees and look forward to welcoming them to the Coke Fertilizer family. Anti-competitive practices in other parts of the ag industry have raised prices for farmers, said Levon Griffin, who farms near Ankeny. She said she recently paid $20,000 to replace the tires on her tractor. These costs make it hard for young farmers, like her sons, to get a foothold in the industry, which may cause them to leave rural areas. We really need to start paying attention to what is happening to the heartland, she said. The FTC, a bipartisan agency that champions the interests of American consumers, has several options for enforcing antitrust laws, which prohibit mergers if they substantially lessen competition. The agency may investigate proposed deals to see if it would harm producers, communities, or consumers. Kahn said, if we conclude it will, we can file a lawsuit, she said. We then go to court to try to convince a judge this deal was illegal, and it's ultimately up to the court. The FTC last fall sued Amazon over alleged monopolistic practices, and in February announced a lawsuit to stop Kroger's purchase of Albertsons, two large grocery chains. The agency succeeded in blocking several healthcare mergers last year. Our next story, Black Hawk Bridge reopens. Crossing over Mississippi closed February 25th when piers shifted. This is out of Lansing. Nearly 2 months after it was temporarily closed for safety reasons, the Black Hawk Bridge across the Mississippi River at Lansing reopened this weekend, eliminating the need to take a water taxi or drive some 70 miles out of the way to cross at the next closest bridge over the river. The historic bridge connecting Lansing with rural Crawford County in Wisconsin was closed February 25th after some of its piers shifted. Construction on a replacement bridge just feet away likely played a role in causing instability in the old bridge, an Iowa Department of Transportation project manager said earlier this month. More than 2,200 cars a day use the bridge, and merchants told the Gazette they experienced a drop-off in business during its brief closure. One man said he sometimes slept in his car because a free water taxi across the Mississippi ended service too early after he got off work late in Wisconsin and he had to return to a farm near Lansing. A drive to the next closest bridge across the Mississippi is about 35 miles away and then 35 miles back. The Iowa DOT said emergency repairs included two new piers and four spans of decking. The bridge was inspected and reopened at 11 a.m. Saturday. The repairs were estimated to cost $2.65 million. A seven-day-a-week water taxi service ended when the bridge was reopened. The department estimated the cost of providing the service, operated by a tour company from Marquette, was $255,000. The contractor building the new Lansing Bridge, Kramer North America, was tapped to do the repairs on the old bridge. Piers on the historic bridge, which opened as a toll road in 1931, were made of timber and extended only about 50 feet below the riverbed. The newly repaired piers are made of concrete and extend into bedrock some 150 feet down. The new bridge is not expected to be complete and open to traffic until 2027. Work on the $124 million project so far has been on the Wisconsin side of the river, where the contractor was pouring concrete into two of the new bridge's five piers. The Iowa DOT said last week a new piece of heavy equipment needed for the construction was being assembled on a barge. It's called a rigger crane because of the ring it sits on. The department said in an update, instead of moving back and forth on a set of tracks like most cranes, this one can rotate 360 degrees. It is being assembled on a barge and will be used in the river for construction of piers 1 and 2, as well as the new bridge. Okay, I'm going to turn to the Iowa Today section with the government notes. Lynn seeks input on policy governing wind projects. This is by Marissa Payne and Grace King. The Linn County Planning and Zoning Commission will hear proposed ordinance amendments for utility-scale wind projects in Linn County during its meeting on May 20th. The commission will make a recommendation to the County Board of Supervisors regarding proposed ordinance changes governing utility-scale wind projects in Linn County. There also will be opportunities for public comment. The supervisors eventually will discuss the panel's recommendation and review the proposed ordinance changes at a future public meeting, which has not been set. The supervisors have the final decision on the proposed amendments for utility-scale wind projects in Linn County. A draft of the proposed ordinance amendments is available on the county website. Updates to regulations include, but are not limited to, setbacks, noise, decommissioning, wildlife mitigation, agricultural impact mitigation, and shadow flicker. To develop proposed policy changes, Linn County Planning and Development staff used lessons learned from the Renewable Energy Review Committee's input on code changes governing utility-scale solar projects, as well as an analysis of current wind ordinance best practices. Before the commission meets May 20th, residents may read a draft of the proposed ordinance amendments on the Linn County website and submit feedback via an online form available at linncountyiowa.gov. Feedback is requested by 5 p.m. May 10th. This feedback will be summarized and presented alongside the proposed changes. To be notified of future Planning and Zoning Commission or Board of Supervisors meetings and agendas, visit the Agendas and Minutes page of the Linn County website. New North Liberty City Hall opens on Thursday. City Hall in North Liberty will be open at its new location in the heart of the city on Thursday. The new building at 360 North Main Street brings City Hall to its fourth and final home. City Hall will close at its current 3 Quail Creek Circle location at 4 p.m. Tuesday, and open for business at the new Main Street location at 7 a.m. Thursday. A public open house and ribbon cutting is planned for May 14th from 4:30 to 6 p.m. before the first City Council meeting in the new chambers. The city began acquiring land for a new civic campus a decade ago. Construction of the new City Hall follows the recent remodeling of the nearby fire station and the 2020 opening of the new police station. The new facility, which sits between Red's Ale House and Police Department amid Dubuque, Cherry, and Main Streets, will house the city's administrative offices, city council chambers, flexible indoor community space, and a public plaza for events, gatherings, and other community building. The office brings together administrative, finance, billing, human resource, legal, building inspection, planning, information technology, and community relations staff into a single facility for the first time ever. Linn County Supervisor Chair to deliver State of the County Address. Linn County Supervisor Chair Kirsten Running Marquardt will deliver this year's State of the County Address at 4 p.m. May 9th in the formal boardroom at the Gene Oxley Linn County Public Service Center, 935 2nd Street Southwest. Running Marquardt will be joined by Linn County Auditor Joel Miller, who will also speak at the event. The event is free and open to the public. Attendees do not need to RSVP. The State of the County will be live streamed on Linn County's website, linncountyiowa.gov. A recording of the event will be available on the website following the event. Marion to hold citywide garage sale. Marion will hold a citywide garage sale from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. May 11th. Residents interested in participating should complete the online form available at cityofmarion.org and indicate the types of items that will be for sale at their address. The deadline to register is 5 p.m. May 5th. It is free to participate, but participants should plan to provide their own signage. A map of participating households will be shared on cityofmarion.org/garage sale the week of May 6th. Marion receives Tree City USA Award. The City of Marion recently received the 2023 Tree City USA Growth Award at the 33rd Annual Community Forestry Awards Luncheon in Ankeny. The Arbor Day Foundation and the Iowa Department of Natural Resources presented the award on April 4th at the FFA Enrichment Center in Ankeny. The Tree City USA Award is a symbol for communities who have made a commitment to the management of public trees, State Forester Jeff Gordon said in a news release. Your community has provided an outstanding example for other Iowa communities by enhancing our forest resources and demonstrating the great value of trees in providing multiple benefits for future generations. Marion was one of 21 Iowa communities to qualify for Tree City USA Growth status. Cities must, at a minimum, provide education and public relations, partnerships, planning and management, and tree planting and maintenance in their communities to receive the award. Marion has consistently been recognized as a Tree City USA since 1993. And also on the Iowa Today section, we've got a picture here with the heading Kennedy Trap Invitational. Student trap shooters from throughout eastern Iowa compete at Invitational Saturday in Cedar Rapids. It shows a picture of Vinton Jr. Emma Baldridge, who gets ready to fire her shot Saturday during the Kennedy Trap Invitational at Otter Creek Sportsman Club in Cedar Rapids. It also shows Joe Sellenthaler of North Scott High School, who judges one of the rounds Saturday during the Kennedy Trap Invitational at Otter Creek Sportsman Club. So that took place on Saturday in Cedar Rapids. Iowa City Schools losing $1.3 million in revenue because of vouchers. School board to review $195 million budget Tuesday night. This is by Grace King out of Iowa City. The revenue lost because of families using taxpayer-funded tuition assistance to attend private schools is just one factor in cuts the Iowa City Community School District is making in its budget. The end of federal pandemic funding also figures in, as does per-student state aid that's not keeping up with inflation, officials said. The district school board meets at 6 p.m. Tuesday to hold a public hearing and vote on the $195 million general fund proposed budget, which is down 6.5% from this year's budget. The meeting will be at the district's administration office at 1725 North Dodge Street in Iowa City. Adam Kurth, the district's chief financial officer, estimates the district is losing $1.3 million in revenue and spending authority because about 140 students enrolled in the district last year are now attending private school. The district estimates that without the Education Savings Account program, which assists families with private school tuition and school supplies, an additional 70 to 80 students would be enrolled in the Iowa City Public Schools, Kurth said. That's where the impact really shows up, he said. While public school districts receive about $1,200 for every student within their district who uses an Education Savings Account, Kurth said it's still a net loss to their budget. We are receiving funds for those students who we previously never would have received any funding, he said. The caveat is, if we have a student who leaves the district, in large part because of the Education Savings Account program, That sentence didn't make sense to me, but let me go on. The amount of funding we've effectively lost appears like any other enrollment decline, and that's much greater than $1,200 per student, Kurth said. The $1,200 per student the district receives for the private school students amounts to about $565,000. It is categorical funding that can't be added to the general fund because it's reserved for particular categories of students, special programs, or special purposes. The district's estimated 2024-25 general fund budget is $195 million, about a 6.5% decrease from the current fiscal year, Kurth said. The fiscal year begins July 1st this year and ends June 30th of 2025. That's $5.5 million less than this year's general fund budget, the largest fund in the budget, which with 86% of it going to pay salaries and benefits for teachers and staff. Most of the money comes from the per pupil state aid set at $7,826 in the new budget year, up from this year's $7,635. Kurth said the 2.5% increase in per pupil state aid next year doesn't truly reflect our increase in costs. For example, employee health insurance costs are going up 8% to 15%. It creates real budget challenges, Kurth said. The district expects it will have to cut another $2 million from its 2025-26 budget next year. That is very large, and it's not something the Iowa City School District has faced before, Kurth said. That's really heavily tied to that influx of federal money and, frankly, some of those resources we put into place during the pandemic to address the well-documented learning loss. We tried to make sure our students had the resources they needed, and there's a lot of costs associated with that. In cutting the budget, the school board earlier this year voted to close Hills Elementary School at the end of this school year. Curriculum purchases are being delayed, and the district is reducing staff through attrition and adjusting a model to control class sizes. In Iowa, enrollment is the driving factor determining how much state funding a district receives. State aid runs a fiscal year behind. The district's student count in October of 2023 will be used to determine funding for the fiscal 2025 budget. During the 2019-20 school year, the district had about 14,500 students. This dropped to 14,200 students during the 2020-21 pandemic school year and rebounded to 14,440 students this year. Under the proposed budget, property owners in the district would pay a proposed levy rate of $16.82 per $1,000 in taxable valuation, about a 55-cent increase from the current property tax rate. For a homeowner with a $200,000 home, the property tax bill for schools would be $1,558 per year, or about $130 a month. One of the contributing factors to a rising tax levy is the increase in management fund cost, which pays for property, liability, and cybersecurity insurance for the district. Those costs are going to go up, and we can do our best to work with insurance providers and make sure we're proactive about safety to limit those costs. But ultimately, we're beholden to them, Kurth said. About 10% of the district's overall levy, $1.84, is to fund a $192 million general obligation bond referendum approved by voters in September 2027 to fund the second half of a 10-year facility master plan. The bond will expire by 2039. Okay, we're going to go to the insight section, the community letters to the editor. Our first one is from Larry Bowen of Cedar Rapids. Iowa politicians should lead like Iowa coaches. Recently, great numbers of people throughout the nation, with and without Iowa ties, took great joy in following the Hawkeye women's basketball team. They gave us many really good moments and did it through trust in each member associated with the program. Everyone was seen as worthy and deserving of that trust. Each fulfilled their role throughout the long season. Coaches were accessible and made the players aware of their importance as the season played out. No one was unimportant, and the road traveled was seen in a positive and worthwhile way. This had to be really great for people like me. For the last few years, it has been easy to see myself as unworthy in the eyes of the leadership of the state. Why? I happen to be part of the opposing political party. Many think that I was a productive and worthwhile public school educator, but so what? Lawmakers passed legislation as if our views were of no value. The Hawkeye women provided a necessary and appreciated lift. I can't remember when an Iowa politician in charge had a good word to say about anything in Iowa, especially if it involved anyone they see as different. They still defend national politicians who live in ways that if their children acted similarly, they would be very upset. You are good people, basically. Lead differently, please. Iowa politicians can certainly have a greater following by making sure that all people count. And again, that was from Larry Bowen of Cedar Rapids. And our other letter is from Renee Schultz Tipton. I don't think that's her last name. I think that's where she's from. It's entitled, "Is No Income Tax What Republicans Really Want?" I feel like Iowans are going to have to take a good look at what they want for this state. The Republican rulers seem to think it's no taxes. Is that really it? Look at where we're going. Our schools and universities are underfunded. At least we're going to pay teachers and support staff a bit more. Apparently, the teacher exodus finally got their attention. Our governor seems to think $900,000 will be just the ticket to replace $29 million in federal food aid. If they want to take away women's reproductive rights, never mind that OBGYNs will follow. We have to, under all circumstances, protect big ag companies, big farms, and big confinements, never mind that the rest of us can deal with awful smells and contaminated water. We also can't add any more conservation ground, parks, or protect forests. Forests? I've never heard anyone complain about urban sprawl. It seems that every single small town, never mind the cities, have housing developments on what used to be cropland. At a time when state and county park use is at an all-time high, we can't afford to maintain and improve the parks we have and can't support and house our park rangers. To me, taxes are a necessary evil that we need to support the things important to Iowans. I always thought that was excellent schools, great health care, trees and forests, accessible, safe parks, clean, safe water, and farms that could support a family. And again, that was from Brene Schultz of Tipton. You are listening to the Cedar Rapids Gazette on IRIS, an Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. All material heard on IRIS is intended solely for the use of the blind and print disabled. I'm your reader, Teresa Whitaker. If you have any comments on this or any other IRIS program, give us a call at 515-243-6833. And now we'll turn to today's obituaries. Evelyn Eloise Waterman of Atkins was age 92 when she died on Thursday, April 18th, at Keystone Care Center in Keystone, Iowa, following 12 years of progressive loss of memory, and now dwells in the house of the Lord, where her memory is restored. Funeral services will be held at 10:30 a.m. Tuesday, April 23rd, at Stevens Lutheran Church in Atkins, by the Reverend Doug Woltmath. Burial will be at St. Stephen's Cemetery. Visitation will be from 4 until 7 p.m. Monday, also at the church. Evelyn was raised by her loving mother, Catherine Mildred Hatter, and her devoted grandparents, aunts, and uncles. She attended Harrison Elementary School and graduated from Roosevelt High School in 1949. She continued her education at Cedar Rapids Business College and entered the work world. She worked at Goss for 25 years before retiring. On July 25, 1953, Evelyn was united in marriage to Norman Keith Waterman at St. Stephen's Lutheran Church. She confirmed her baptism faith through the rite of confirmation on October 28, 1953. An active member of St. Stephen's Lutheran Church in Atkins, she was a member of the LWML and Service Committee. In her community, she was also a member of the Adolph H. Schuller American Legion Auxiliary Post. Evelyn enjoyed reading and playing games and cards with her family and friends. She was always ready to road trip with Keith or other family and friends, or welcome family and friends into her home. Evelyn is survived by her daughters Nancy, spouse John Rindernecht of Atkins, and Elizabeth, spouse Brent Steers of Danville, Indiana. Grandchildren, Dr. Catherine, spouse Paul Moritz, Samuel Steers, and Sarah, spouse Connor Lott. Brother-in-law, Donald Waterman, sisters-in-law, Catherine Waterman, and Judy Waterman. She was preceded in death by her mother, Mildred Hatter, her husband, Keith Waterman, her brothers-in-law, Warren Waterman and Robert Waterman, sister-in-law, Eunice Waterman, and great-granddaughter, Evelyn Christine Moritz. The family wishes to thank the staffs at Rock Ridge and Keystone Care Centers for their care of Evelyn over the years. Memorials may be made to St. Stephen's Lutheran Church, Atkins Fire Department, the Adolph H. Schuller American Auxiliary Post, or Central Lutheran School. Jacqueline Jackie Ann Lenahan, 72, of Solon, died April 13th at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinic following a battle with cancer. A celebration of life will be held from 1 to 3 p.m. on Sunday, April 28th, at the Kirkwood Room in Iowa City. Memorials may be directed to the American Cancer Society or the Friends of the Animal Center Foundation. Jackie was born June 22, 1951, the daughter of Billy Dean and Barbara Alice Branson Rogers in Iowa City. She graduated from Jefferson High School in 1969. She married William Bill Lenahan on June 28, 1969, in Cedar Rapids. They lived in Solon since 1980. Jackie worked for Scheller Globe UTA for 44 years as a business analyst, retiring in 2018. Survivors include her husband Bill, her daughter Olivia Libby Lenahan of North Liberty, her son Jason, and his wife Kayala of Corpus Christi, Texas, her grandchildren Dylan, Orion, and Jacob, her sister Claudette Dianetto, and her husband David of Cedar Rapids, her sister-in-law Amy Copenhaver of Cedar Rapids, and her nephews Jesse and Justin Gianetto. She was preceded in death by her parents and her brother Lester Rogers. Andrew A.J. Fouch, 34, of Cedar Rapids, passed away Thursday, April 18th, at the University of Iowa Hospital in Iowa City. Memorial service will be at 2 p.m. Thursday, April 25th, at Murdoch Linwood Funeral Home and Cremation Service, Cedar Rapids. A live stream of the memorial service may be accessed on the funeral home website tribute page for Andrew under photos and videos, starting at the time of service. A private burial will take place Friday at Riverside Cemetery in Marshalltown. Andrew was born November 4, 1989, in Bellflower, California, the son of Mark and Don McCarty Fouch. On July 23, 2022, Andrew was united in marriage to Stephanie Brown in Marion. He was a video gamer who loved to go fishing and camping with his family and kids. Andrew enjoyed traveling and going to concerts with his wife. He had the best deep barrel laugh and always lit up a room. More than anything, Andrew loved his family and he will be dearly missed. Andrew is survived by his wife Stephanie, parents Mark and Dawn, children Rachel, Landon, Jordan, Jeffrey, and Jonathan, paternal grandfather Dale Fouch Jr., maternal grandmother Ginger McCarty, aunts and uncles Dave and Angie Fouch, Amy and Michael Brown, Jillian and Ozzie Pina, Matthew McCarty, cousins Joel and Taylor Fouch, Roman and Vivian Pina, Zachary, Aiden, Piper, Elliot, and Oliver Brown, and Stacy and Jeff Nichols, close family and friends Mark and Stacy Fisher, and godfather Bob Owen. He was preceded in death by his paternal grandmother, Kathleen Fouch, paternal great-grandmother, Goldie Thursby, maternal grandfather, Al Hamby, maternal great-grandparents, Tori and Shirley Johansson, and cousin Todd Weiser. Honorary urn bearers are Brandon Fisher, Zach Zucan, Jamie Yowler, Cody Miller. Victor L. Stadler, 88, of Cedar Rapids, took the hand of his Lord and Savior on Friday, April 19th. Dad was born at home September 3, 1935, in Griggstown County, Kentucky, the son of Virgie and Victor L. Stadler, Sr. Sadly, his father was tragically killed before David was born. Victor spent his childhood and youth in around Chicago, Illinois. His summers were spent in Kansas and Kentucky with grandparents and cousins. His grandfather, Pappy, influenced Dad to grow to be a man who loved and walked with the Lord. Dad eloped with the love of his life, Carol Ann Klenk, when he was 18 years old. They were together for 68 years before Mom's passing in 2020. Vic worked as a fireman on the Illinois Central Railroad before enlisting in the U.S. Air Force. He served our country proudly during the Korean conflict. He graduated from the University of Illinois with a degree in electrical engineering after thinking he was not college material. He worked on the Apollo space program for Collins Radio, which brought his family to Cedar Rapids. He also had a short stint with Lockheed in Santa Cruz, California. With the opening of Area 10, Kirkwood Community College, he completed graduate school to become a professor of electrical engineering technology until his retirement in 1998. Victor and Carol consider themselves blessed with three daughters, seven grandchildren, and three great-grandchildren. Those left behind to carry on his family legacy are Deborah, spouse Daniel, who is deceased, Lord, Barbara Guerra, spouse Antonio Esparza, Nancy, spouse Chris Kumsher, Zachary, spouse Hesika Lord, Julianne, spouse Britt Wilson, Madeline, Isabel and Emma Kumsher, Aubrey and Trey Guerra, Jasmine and Gideon Wilson, Declan Lord, and his sister Nancy Foote. His parents and brother Rudy Hall preceded Victor in death. Dad trusted in Jesus after reading a Gideon Bible while stationed in Korea. A co-worker at Collins encouraged him to attend Knoll Ridge Baptist Church, where he met lifelong friend Ken Reeser, who invited him to Cedar Valley Bible Church. CVBC has been his church family for over 40 years, where he served as a deacon, elder, Bible study, and Sunday school teacher and small group leader. Vic and Carol joyfully moved and lived in the Cottage Grove Place community for 9 years, making very special friends among the residents, staff, and servers there. They are way too many to single out, but the family is very grateful to their friendship, care, support, and laughter. Victor's family share heartfelt thanks to Dr. Marianne Nelson. Besides being Dad's excellent doctor, she was his confidant and trusted friend. Stephanie, Alicia, Bobby Joe, and Noel of Unity Point Hospice, who built a very comforting relationship with Dad in the last month, gave our family much-needed encouragement. A homegoing service for Victor will be held at 1 p.m. Saturday, April 27th, at Cedar Valley Bible Church, 3636 Cottage Grove Avenue, Southeast, Cedar Rapids. A graveside service with military honors will follow the service at Linwood Cemetery, 520 Wilson Avenue, Southwest, Cedar Rapids. You are invited to attend. Cremation and interment services provided by Murdoch Linwood Funeral Home and Cremation Service of Cedar Rapids. In lieu of flowers, Victor and family will kindly thank you to direct any donations to Cedar Valley Bible Church. The grass withereth, the flower fadeth, but the word of our God shall stand forever. Isaiah 40, chapter 8. And James Howard Struve of Cedar Rapids was 82 when he passed away on Friday, April 19th, at his home, surrounded by his family. A funeral service will be held at 11 a.m. on Thursday, April 25th, at Cedar Memorial Chapel of Memories. A live stream of the funeral service may be accessed on the funeral home website under the obituary for James Howard Struve, under the video tab, starting at 11 a.m. April 25th. A visitation will be held at Cedar Memorial Chapel's stateroom on Wednesday, April 24th, from 4 to 7 p.m. Jim was born May 29th, 1941, in Cedar Rapids, the son of Wilfred and Ruth Shump Struve. He graduated from Washington High School in 1959. He attended University of Iowa and UNI. He met Sandy, the love of his life, in 1961. They were united in marriage on February 9, 1962, in Cedar Falls. Jim's career in banking began in 1965 at Merchants National Bank in Cedar Rapids. He enjoyed working at the starting line with the MNB Biggie Bank bike races in the 70s and 80s. Jim purchased City National Bank in 1987 and loved his time as a banker. Jim was a former president of Elmcrest County Club and a former president of the Boy Scouts of America. He was a Boy Scout leader for many years while his sons were in Scouts, enjoying trips to the Boundary Waters. Jim retired in 1993 and enjoyed traveling with Sandy for many years, in addition to spending time at their second home in Henderson, Nevada. One of Jim's greatest joys was spending time with his family, playing with his grandchildren, taking trips with the entire family, and the numerous hikes on Thanksgiving. Jim spent a lot of time on the golf course, enjoying a hole-in-one in 1997. Jim also enjoyed several fishing trips, especially the trips to Cabo with his old high school buddies Tom, Al, and Dick. Jim is survived by his wife Sandy, sons Rick, Cedar Rapids, Tom, spouse Tanja, Palo, daughters Karen, spouse David Huber of Marion, Jenny, spouse Paul Storer of Cedar Rapids, 12 grandchildren, Brandon, Lindsay, Kelsey, Jenna, Nicholas, Emily, John, Joey, Michael, Kaylin, Layton, Adeline, and bonus granddaughter Andrea, 10 great-grandchildren with one on the way, in addition to many nieces, nephews, and friends. Jim was preceded in death by his parents, Wilfred and Ruth Struve, and his brother Roger Struve. The family would like to thank Home Instead for the care provided for Jim in the home and Care Initiatives Hospice. Memorials in Jim's memory may be directed to co-college biology research projects or to the Kirkwood Foundation. Francis G. Byrne, B-Y-R-N, age 86 of Conroy, passed away Thursday, April 18th. A memorial service will be held on Wednesday, April 24th at 10 a.m. at Kloster Funeral Home in Marengo. The family will receive friends from 4 to 7 p.m. on Tuesday, April 23rd at Kloster Funeral Home in Marengo. Burial will be in the Oxford Cemetery in Oxford. Memorials may be sent in care of Francis Byrne to Kloster Funeral Home, 298 West Washington Street in Marengo. Kloster Funeral Home in Marengo is assisting the family with arrangements. Francis, also known as Frisky or Sparky to his friends, was born May 8, 1937 in Rutledge, Missouri, to Grover and Marie Kirkpatrick Byrne. Francis married the love of his life, Darlene Schropp, on September 10, 1960, in Alburnett. Of this union, the couple had three children, Rhonda Sue, Mary, and Rick. Francis owned and operated a small engine repair service and later worked at the Amana Society Farms for several years before retiring in 1991. He was also a volunteer on the Amana Fire Department from 1977 to 1990. Francis enjoyed fishing, drives out on the country roads, berry picking, cutting firewood, and having coffee with friends. He was known for waving at passersby with a cigar in hand. Survivors include his daughter, Mary, spouse Andy Adams of Conroy, and his son Rick, spouse Diane Benner of Bern. And his son Rick, spouse Diane Benner, Bern of Williamsburg, sisters Christine Snow and Fern Zart, a brother, Frank Bern, three grandchildren, Bonnie Tabay, spouse Chris, Bradley, spouse Lacey Ivy the second, and Danielle Bern, a step-grandson, Marcus Adams, and two great-grandchildren, Misty and Lily Adams. He was preceded in death by his parents, his wife, an infant daughter, Rhonda Sue, two sisters, Mary and Daisy, three brothers, Ronald, Donald, and Chaperon. Also preceded him in death was his canine companions, Angel, Tiny, and Angel II. The family would like to thank the North English Care Center, Compass Memorial Hospital, and Hospice for their wonderful care of Francis. And that is it for our obituaries today. And now I'm going to turn to the sports section. Oh, nope, I apologize. I do have more obituaries here on the next page. I'm sorry about that. Kevin Wary of North Liberty was 66 when he passed away on Thursday, April 18th, at Mercy Medical Center in Cedar Rapids. A celebration of life will be held at a later date. Kevin Wary was born on November 27, 1957, to Daryl and Geraldine Topping Wary in Maquoketa. He graduated from Midland High School in 1976 and North Iowa Community College in Kalmar. He was united in marriage to Sandy Ines on August 27, 1983. They were blessed with three wonderful children, Drew, Daniel, and Mackenzie. Kevin worked in the steel scrap industry his whole life. He currently worked at Gerdau in Wilton as the purchasing agent. Kevin was very outgoing and enjoyed meeting new people and building relationships with everyone he worked with. He was a volunteer firefighter for 23 years. He was a Boy Scout leader, helping both his sons earn their Eagle Scout awards. He also coached them both in baseball when they were younger. He was a huge NASCAR fan and loved to watch the Iowa Hawkeyes and Chicago Bears. Those left to cherish his memories are his wife, Sandy, sons Drew, Daniel, spouse Emily, daughter Mackenzie, and granddaughter Olivia. His greatest joy was being a dad and grandpa. He is also survived by his brothers Steve, spouse Val of Wyoming, Iowa, Brad, spouse Lisa of Wyoming, Iowa, Dwayne, spouse Sharon of Muscatine, and his sister Suzanne, spouse Matt Schnedler of Franklin, Tennessee. He was preceded in death by his father Daryl and mother Geraldine. The family would like to thank Dr. Vince Reed, Dr. Ann Stroh, Tracy Ridgway, ARNP, Chad Proctor, BSN, FNP, FSN, MSN, and all the wonderful staff on the third floor of the Hall Perrine Cancer Center. We would also like to thank Dr. Tim Quinn and all the staff and doctors on the fourth floor of the Mercy Medical Center who took such good care of Ken during his many stays in the hospital. Cards and condolences may be directed to the family at Dawson Funeral Services. Attention, Kevin Wary family. Max Dean Grover of Rowley passed away in Independence, Iowa on April 18th. He was 88. Max is survived by Charlotte, his wife of 70 years. Children include sons Timothy, spouse Deborah Grover of Pleasant Hill, Anthony, spouse Jean Grover of Wildwood, Missouri, and daughter Diane Grover of Independence. Grandchildren include Emily, spouse Jesse Bainter, Abigail Grover, Matthew, spouse Lauren Grover, Tanya, spouse Tyler Shepherd Grover, Sophia, spouse Eric Kramer Grover, and Alicia, spouse Logan Janes. His legacy also includes great-grandchildren Isaac, Owen, and Vera, Charlotte Bainter, Kellen Vogel, Tegan Dostanek, and Leighton and Aislinn Janes. He is also survived by his sister Ruby Marks and many nieces and nephews. Funeral services will be 11 a.m. Wednesday, April 24th at the First United Methodist Church in Rowley, with the Reverend Paul Evans officiating. Burial will be at the Raleigh Cemetery with military honors. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. Tuesday, April 23rd at White Funeral Home in Independence, where a Masonic memorial ceremony will begin at 7 p.m. Visitation will continue for an hour before services Wednesday at the church. A memorial fund has been established and will be used to contribute to organizations close to Max's heart. John Jerry J.P. Nelson, 59, of West Branch, passed away in the familiar surrounds of his own home from conditions of congestive heart disease in West Branch on Friday, April 19th. Graveside services will be open to the public and held on Monday, April 22nd at 1 p.m. in the Rochester Cemetery, officiated by Reverend Dr. Charles Klink, the Rochester United Methodist Church. J.P., son of Richard Otis and Janet Ray Sharpless Nelson, was born on October 9, 1964, in Iowa City. He graduated from Cedar Rapids Prairie High School, DeVry Institute, and Bellevue University in Nebraska. In 1996, J.P. was united in marriage to Judy Nelson in South Dakota. J.P. was a truck driver and a truck driver instructor. He taught students how to drive semi-trucks at Western Iowa Tech, Hale Trucking, and Decker Trucking, giving the foundation of the how and why we do things in 18-wheelers. J.P. was a people person and loved to visit with anyone. He loved working at Menards because he was surrounded by people all day. When walking in Herbert Hoover Park, he would greet all the dogs and their owners. In spite of his struggles with alcohol abuse and depression, he was cheerful and loved his family and friends. J.P. is survived by his mother, Janet Nelson, his sisters, Lori Nelson, Lisa Lower, and Kelly Nelson, and his brother, Scott Nelson, nieces Emily Graves and Arlette Blythe. He was preceded in death by his father, Richard Otis Nelson, in 1983. James L. Jim Starr Sr. of Monticello died Saturday, April 20th at Mercy Hospital in Cedar Rapids following an extended illness, surrounded by his family. Visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. Tuesday evening at the Getch Funeral Home in Monticello, with a brief prayer service and military honors commencing at 7. Surviving are his wife Tracy, his children James, spouse Tabitha Starr, Jessica, spouse Cody Miles, Tiffany, spouse Doru Contardo, Christopher, spouse Rachel Roney, Zachary Starr, Alec Karnick, Austin Starr, 11 grandchildren, Gavin, Aspen, Bailey, Abigail, Camille, Ian, Ruger, Dawson, Madeline, Caden, Waylon, his best friend Eric Loney, and other good friends, his siblings Lori Nash, Bart Starr, his father and mother-in-law William and Wendy Carpenter, other in-laws David Carpenter, Christina Hayesy, Joseph Carpenter, and several other aunts, uncles, nieces, nephews, and cousins. He was preceded by his parents, his beloved dog Chico, and several aunts, uncles, and cousins. James Leroy Starr was born December 7th, 1970, at Aledo, Illinois. He was son of Francis and Carolyn Willett Starr. Jim received his education in the Aledo schools. He went on to serve in the United States Army. Jim then started his career in truck driving, first as a over-the-road, as an owner-operator of Starr Trucking. In more recent years, he drove for L.L. Pelling, doing road construction. Jim married Tracy Carpenter on February 5th, 2003, at Manchester. When he wasn't working, he enjoyed bartering for items, hunting, fishing, going to Walcott, and time spent with his family and friends, especially his grandkids. Okay, we're turning to the sports section, and I'm going to start with what's going on today in sports. Events of area interest, where there's a girls' soccer match, Marion at Vinton-Shelsburg at 5:30 p.m. this evening, and Regina at Dyersville-Beckman at 5 p.m. And boys soccer, we have Vinton-Shelsburg at Marion at 5 p.m. In girls golf, Liberty, Iowa City West at City High in Finkbine Golf Course at 1 p.m. Marion at Center Point Urbana Wildcat Golf Course at 4 p.m. Boys golf, Center Point Urbana at Marion Gardner Golf Course. 3 p.m., we have Regina Independence at Williamsburg at the Stone Creek Golf Course at 4 p.m. In men's golf, Iowa State at the Big 12 Tournament in Trinity, Texas, and UNI at the MVC Tournament in Lake Ozark, Missouri. On television, we have NBA playoffs, Magic at Cavaliers at 6 p.m. on NBA TV, 76ers at Knicks at 6:30 p.m. on TNT and True TV. We have the Lakers at the Nuggets at 9 p.m. on TNT and True TV. In the NHL playoffs, we have the Maple Leafs at the Bruins at 6 p.m. on ESPN, Islanders at Hurricanes at 6:30 p.m. on ESPN2, the Golden Knights at the Stars at 8:30 p.m. on ESPN, and the Kings at the Oilers at 9 p.m. on ESPN2. In Major League Baseball today, the White Sox are at the Twins at 6:30 p.m., and you can catch that on FS1 or NBCS Chicago. Let's see. That's not today. Okay. That looks like pretty much all there is today. So that brings us to the end of today's reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette. I'm your reader, Teresa Whitaker. Thanks for sharing your time with IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind.